Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Ion Travel with Peter Greenberg, that's me, ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Takeoff 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
This is the Ion Travel Podcast with CBS News travel editor Peter Greenberg. Presented by Clear. Enroll today at clearme.com/Peter. And try Clear at the busiest airports nationwide.
Hi, everybody. Peter Greenberg here, and welcome to another Ion Travel Podcast. This week, we're in Greece, on board the brand new Silver Sea cruise ship, the Silver Moon, on her inaugural voyage with American passengers. I had the opportunity to sit down with the Minister of Tourism of Greece, Harry Theo Harris, for a full update on the travel situation in that country. Remember, one of the first countries to open to American travelers was Greece back in May. And then, my extended conversation with the chairman and CEO of the Royal Caribbean Group, Richard Fain, for a full update on the cruise ship industry, the battle over vaccination requirements, and where he's sailing and why. First up, my talk with Harry Theo Harris, the Minister of Tourism of Greece.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know business.
I mentioned we're in Greece, and it's very appropriate for me to welcome our next guest because, in fact, our first guest, because Greece was really the first country that opened its doors to Americans back in May, more than 2 months ago. And that didn't mean just air travelers. It meant cruise ship travelers. And that's a big deal. So joining me now to talk about that and what it means for the rest of the world, the Minister of Tourism of Greece, Harry Theo Harris.
Minister Theo Harris, thanks so much for joining us on the show. Consider the fact that you're joining us on a ship, Silver Sea Silver Moon, a brand new ship, but significant in that it's a ship with Americans cruising through Greece.
Yes, you're right. The significance of restarting of cruising, an industry that was particularly hard hit during this pandemic, is very, very important, both symbolically, but also really, it seems trust is returning. So it's good for everyone overall.
And what did you do to allow this to happen? Because we're still going through a lot of stuff in the United States, particularly in the state of Florida, the state of Texas, about mandated for vaccines or not, who can cruise, who can't. That's not an issue here because you have other rules.
Yes, we worked very, very closely, but very hard as well with our health experts to create those protocols for the whole of the cruising industry, not just for Greece and not just even for Europe, but globally as well. We've also kept an open mind. We tried many things. We did a lot of research in terms of vaccinated people, non-vaccinated, the mask wearing, etc., etc.
And what did that tell you?
Well, it told us that we can, if the ship is close to fully vaccinated, you can never be 100%. If the ship is close to fully vaccinated, then you can allow not wearing of masks aboard the ship. So those kind of rules, we had to work very closely, as I said, with our researchers, our doctors, our health experts. But at the same time, we imposed them and with great results up to now.
And of course, it wasn't just the ships, it was the ports. You had to deal with each individual island on its own terms.
We had to categorize each and every port to see the kind of role it will play, both in good times and in bad times. What happens when you have a case aboard the ship? When do you offload it? Which port? What kind of facilities does the port have to have in order to deal with such an eventuality?
And I'm guessing initially the answer was nobody had it.
No, nobody. Of course, nobody had it. But we had to, as I said, categorize, impose specific rules, not just for the ships, but for the ports as well, and then implement those rules because ports, by and large, they are governed by the government. They're a public entity. So we had to ensure that those things were in place in time.
And you built those physical structures.
We built the structures, but more importantly, we built the procedures. We built the kind of officers and the kind of people responsible for handling each and every eventuality and what happens at every step of the way. So, as I said, the important thing was to imagine the situation and then implement the kind of imaginary procedures, drill them, test them, and ensure that everything is in place.
Now, for example, we're in Piraeus today, the port of Athens. Before I could get on the ship, I had to get tested. It was a rapid test, but I still had to do that over and above having a vaccination card from the United States or even having taken a PCR test to get here in the first place.
I was very, very glad that they made no exceptions for ministers as well. So I had to get tested as well. That means that the cruise industry is taking this very, very seriously. And to be fair, I feel very, very confident and very, very safe when a cruise company is implementing those rules, because those rules are being implemented strictly with no exceptions. And that makes me feel safe when I'm next to someone that I don't know.
You were one of the first countries to publicly say we're opening back in May, right? And everybody else said, oh, you're jumping the gun, it's too soon. You were even in a lockdown situation then in Greece at that point, right? There was a curfew.
You're right. We started in January creating the plan, urging everybody else to work with us in order to create the international COVID certificates that will be required for traveling. Then as we implemented the plans, we were confident enough in the beginning of March to say that we will open in mid-May. And of course, we will still, as you rightly say, in curfew. As a result, we had to create a whole reopening plan from 9th of March until the 14th of May, both internally and externally, in order to ensure that we were at the point where we could accept visitors.
And what was the biggest challenge to do that?
Coordination. It's too many agencies, too many issues.
Too many cooks in the kitchen.
You're right. And at the same time, a lot of fear. The good thing was that this was the second year of the pandemic, so we had a lot of knowledge. Doctors knew more. It wasn't like last year. Last year was much more difficult in terms of the insecurity that our health experts felt making decisions. But this year, we capitalized on the new tools as well. We capitalized on vaccinations. We capitalized on rapid tests. This allowed, like the process we felt today, the rapid test process, to allow boarding in an efficient manner.
Of course, I like to say the worst four-letter word in travel that starts with F is fear. And you still have to mitigate that. That hasn't gone away.
No, it hasn't. But we're actually taking fear and converting it into care. We have to make something good out of this. And the good thing is that we feel that caring, which is the heart, the core of the traveling and touristic experience, and normally caring is about, a cold drink on a hot summer day or a pillow behind in your back when you're sitting. Now it's a lot about caring about your health. So it's implementing those protocols with no exceptions, with no cutting corners, because I care for your health. So this is, I think, the core of the message that we're trying to convey.
You know, it's interesting when I see what other countries are doing. And the problem is everybody's acting solo, right? There's not a lot of coordination. Italy now has a pass that if you get the pass, you can go to museums and restaurants. France is thinking about that. Is that the kind of pass that you're thinking about?
Well, we're doing something similar for mass events,
concerts
and also the indoor activities in the bars or even the restaurants. So we have this for the places where it's actually very easy to contract the disease. But we don't have it for everyday life, to go to the beach, to be outdoors, to eat outdoors at the restaurant. And there are many places in Greece that you can eat outdoors. So we implement a mixing approach in order to ensure that we preserve the core of the experience.
You just had a situation in Mykonos, right, where you stopped the music.
Yes, you're right. We're not afraid to take difficult, in economic terms, decisions if we are to protect the health of our visitors, but of our citizens as well. Mykonos was a special case. There was a lot of partying and fun on one side, but on the other side, there was a bit of letting down of the rules. We wanted to send the message that the kind of vigilance on the protocols and on the rules will not be compromised during the summer.
And of course, it's all about communicating to your counterparts in other countries, because it's one thing for an American, let's say, to come to Greece. But now if that same American wants to do what the Americans used to do all the time and basically bootstrap that with another country, all of a sudden we're dealing with different rules all the time.
Yes, unfortunately, there's a lot of fragmentation, and we haven't reached the point of maturity yet where this fragmentation coalesces to something simpler for the average traveler. The good thing is that Europe has some kind of continuity, some kind of rules, but not everything is on par in terms of how things are being implemented. This is something we have to live with. We are now moving to a different phase of the disease. You know, there's a lot of cases in the fourth wave, but not a lot of hospitalizations. This is more and more the disease of the unvaccinated and of the young people. So we need to see how this changes things and what we have to change in our attitude.
Have the vaccines essentially taken death off the table?
More or less. The vaccines have provided the option to take the death off the table, but we still have a lot of people refusing to get vaccinated or being skeptical about it, or just not, they let it for a bit of later on because it doesn't suit their calendar or whatever it is. I think the message to those people is that you're only harming yourselves. This is not anymore a social issue because your guy next to you has the option to get vaccinated as well. So it's every man for himself. So we would urge everyone to get vaccinated, because this disease spreads so quickly that it will not stop until it reaches you.
You know, it's interesting. On this particular ship, you can't be on the ship unless you're fully vaccinated. That applies to the officers, the crew, and the passengers. Does that apply to all the cruise ships in Greece?
No, it's not a rule that all the passengers have to be vaccinated. But if cruise ships choose to do so, then this is allowed by the rules. But we do allow mixed shipping with stricter rules than the ones that fully vaccinated cruising has.
Yeah, because in the United States, Carnival and Royal Caribbean, which is the parent corporation of this line, basically says, oh yeah, if you want to take a cruise with us and you're not vaccinated, you got to provide proof that you're carrying $10,000 worth of medical insurance and $30,000 worth of medical evacuation and repatriation coverage. They're basically saying, you get sick, you're paying for it.
Well, this is not what we are saying, both for passengers in cruise ships and tourists in general. We're saying that our health system is a strong system, certainly much stronger than before the pandemic. And we are confident that we will cover any eventuality if you need any hospitalization as far as COVID is concerned. So we are providing free of charge COVID coverage within Greece through the national health system. So this is our guarantee, if you like, our pledge to the customer.
Because so many travelers may not be talking about this, but they're thinking about it, right? As much as I want to go to Greece or anywhere else for that matter, I don't want to get somewhere and not be able to get home because something happens. I get stuck.
Yes, you're right. We're also providing accommodation free of charge if people are found positive, whether that's coming into Greece or going out because they have to be tested before they go back to the home country. So all in all, we provide the basis, if you like, to make a decision to come to Greece, ensuring that if the thing turns sour because of a COVID disease, that they have nothing to fear.
You know, there's the big R word, reciprocity.
Yes.
Right? Right now, most of your fellow countrymen and countrywomen can't go to the United States, right? We have not relaxed those restrictions.
Yes.
So it's been a one-way street here.
Yes, and it's remarkable that we have 9 daily flights plus the Emirates one, 10 daily flights from the US to Greece, being supported only by the one-way tickets and, of course, the return tickets when their vacation finishes. We feel...
But that's not sustainable.
It's not. That's why we feel that this is a welcome decision. This decision made no sense before. You had third countries in a worse epidemiological position being allowed to go to the US, but not Schengen countries. So this did not make much sense. It was more based on politics.
So we're still waiting for that decision.
Yes, we're still waiting for that. And we're hoping that this is close by. President Biden alluded to the process being in the pipeline.
He did, and then it got shut down.
Well, we have to wait and see. I hope that this decision will come because it makes, as I said, no health sense. It's only political as far as I can see.
Well, speaking of politics, just 2 days ago, the United Kingdom announced that if you were fully vaccinated, you can now go to the United Kingdom without being vaccinated, without being quarantined.
Yes, I think this is a sound decision. It made no sense to not allow vaccinated people freedom of movement. You know, it also dilutes the message that we want to send to our people that if you get vaccinated, you will return back to normality. So please do not stay unvaccinated. So if you want to push people to get vaccinated, then why do you restrict them still? You're also saying maybe that it's in the back of your mind that there's still something wrong with vaccines. They still do not allow you to go back to full normality. So I think this is the right decision. Certainly it will go a long way to restoring normality for those people.
And as we navigate these still uncharted waters, is there ever going to be a vaccine passport?
Well, we do have this certificates, which are not just vaccine, the recovery as well, certificates and negative test certificates.
Is that EU or Greece?
Well, both. We implemented it, first country, but we also pushed the other countries to work with us and create an EU green certificate. And I'm very glad to say that in record time, compared to Brussels, in record time, we're ready ready to implement it.
And as you begin to reach out, and as Americans begin to flood the zone, Americans, you know they're coming.
Yes.
We're here.
Yes. Welcome.
Sure. But at the same time, you know, we were just at a hotel in Athens that was running 70 to 80% occupancy, and it was a majority of Americans.
Yes.
That had not happened in 17 months.
No. I'm very, very sad that we couldn't implement it earlier, but better, late than never. In the sense that we feel that the relationships with the airlines, with the cruise lines, with the operators of tourism is now much, much stronger because we have worked together. We're fixing problems together. We're flagging problems to each other to ensure that we keep everyone and all the procedures in place in the right way. So I think the fact that we are managing to find success now during this time bodes well for the future.
Now, of course, in the past, traditional success was defined by numbers, right? Numbers of visitors, average number of stay, how much they're going to spend per day, et cetera, et cetera. That's out the window now, right?
Yes, it is out the window. Well, at least for some people that feel that this is not the number one priority. And certainly I'm one of them. Yes, it is a quality because the quality now is about the health. This is not about whether the drink is the right one and the mixing was done in the right way. This is about your health.
My thanks to Minister Theo Harris. Richard Fain has been at the helm of Royal Caribbean for nearly 33 years. That's longer than any other cruise industry executive ever. And for the past 17 months, he's had to navigate in some very rough and uncharted waters. I talked to Fain about the challenges, the rules, the changing infrastructure, design and protocols, the risks, and whether as well as how cruising is recovering.
Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Get up to 30% off well-crafted and personalized gifts from participating shops until May 12th. This year, embrace your creative side. You know, the side your mom gave you. And shop Etsy for custom jewelry, style pieces, home decor, and extra special items she'll adore. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
Let's go back 18 months ago. You were coming off a great year, 2019. Industry poised for even more growth. New ships coming out of the shipyards at an unprecedented rate. Not just you, but every other company. Nothing prepared you for this, did it?
Nothing in my life or my career has prepared me for this or any of us. It's been just devastating. And as you point out, we started on such a high note, and to go from that wonderful plateau to where we are today is very disappointing. Not only for us in the industry, but so many people suffered. Obviously, we tend to be focused on what we do day to day, but the suffering has been horrific across the board. And the U.S. and Europe have come out relatively well, but you look at some of these other places and it's just heartbreaking.
You know, people forget the process that goes into any corporation or company. You know, you ask kids where food comes from, they tell you the store. That's not really the case. So when a cruise line basically stops operations in a situation like this, it's not just the employees, it's not just the staff, it's not just the passengers, it's the people who drive buses, it's the people who catch the fish that end up getting served at dinner. I mean, nobody really understood all the connectivity until this happened.
The impact has just been across the board to so many people. And actually, we rely on a lot of small businesses. Travel advisors, stevedores, as you say, bus drivers, and all of them, the knock-on effect is terrible, and the knock-on effect from them. And so the devastation across the board has just been heart-wrenching to so many people.
And have you ever been able to put a number on it?
Well, the industry has measured that just in the United States, the cruise industry is responsible for 740,000 American jobs. But internationally, it's obviously even greater. And I don't know that measures the full extent.
You know, I've been to your offices, and like many corporations, you have a crisis center. You have a command center. You've got contingency plans. I've seen all the loose leaf notebooks of what to do if. You didn't have one for this.
And, you know, I went to a business school, actually a fairly decent business school, and they just didn't have a course in how to manage a corporation with zero revenue. There was nobody ever imagined something of this, of severity. And we just weren't prepared for it, and we had to make up the rules as we went along. We also found that nobody else had either. So the governments did not have plans for things like this. The health authorities, the people, our partners didn't. So we all had to work together. The one thing that was actually encouraging coming out of this was how much people did work together. I'm so impressed. I'm so grateful to the effort that our people went through, the endless nights, the endless days of trying to figure out ways through this thicket. And the result is that we've come through as a company, as an industry, and not only, when I say as an industry, not only the cruise lines, but all the other people that rely on us, the travel advisors, the services, the farmers, everybody has come through shockingly well, given the horrificness of the circumstance. But we do have to recover now because we can't keep going like this.
Yeah, but the optics going back to day one was that nobody really was working together. That was what everybody was thinking. Nobody was working together. You're almost operating across purposes.
Well, there was huge confusion. No, there isn't any crisis. There's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of really strange things happening. I mean, if you go back, the CDC was recommending that we not wear face masks. The number of testing in the United States was a few dozen testing a day, whereas today we're doing 1 million, 2 million, 3 million a day. We were totally unprepared. The thought was, if you have a case on board, isolate the whole ship and keep everybody together. I mean, so many of these things, when you look back, are saying, well, it's exactly the opposite of what we should have done, but we've learned. We put our heads together, and while it may have seemed disjointed, and obviously it had to be, especially because we're all working from isolated circumstances. Gradually, the science came to the fore, and the science guided us. The science didn't answer the question, but it guided us through the thicket. It provided the background.
Of course, I remember the optics, as do so many others, your passengers and the passengers of other cruise lines, a ship being quarantined in Yokohama, other ships being unable to come to a dock who had either sick or dying passengers. And those are such indelible images that are still being thought of today. I mean, you've got your work cut out for you in terms of turning the public around.
Well, and it is a 180 degree shift, because 18 months ago, 17 months ago, we as an industry, the cruise industry, was the poster child of what could go wrong or what the risks were. At least that was the perception, if not the reality. And what we set out to do was say, wait a minute, all the things that people are criticizing as potential risk factors can really be advantages. The cruise industry can not only do as well as others, can not only overcome the problems, but it can set an example. It can be the one that shows how this can be done right. And so we've gone from the cruise industry being one of the most dangerous things you can do in people's perceptions to today, the fact is that cruising can be one of the safest places to be.
So you did follow the science. There are so many things you were in compliance with along the way, a lot of it recommended by the CDC. But it was not just procedural changes, it was design changes. It was, literally installation of different equipment.
Well, we assembled the Healthy Sail Panel along with Norwegian Cruise Line.
Which is an unusual situation because you partnered with a competitor.
We partnered with a competitor and one whose thought process was different than our own. But we had the same objective. We wanted to make cruising safer than a land-based vacation. And so we worked together. We assembled a team of, talk about superstars. We had the previous head of the Health and Human Services, ex-CDC director, previous head of FDA. We had engineers. We had scientists, epidemiologists, virologists. We had so many ists, I don't even know how to pronounce them all. And they were, in each case, they were the tops of their field, and they worked together. They thought this was extraordinary because we worked together in a way to be successful, and they put a degree of effort into it that I was absolutely shocked about. And they gave us guidance on how to change the air filtration system, how to change the medical center. Very, very detailed oriented, very progressive thought processes.
So some of them were serious physical changes.
Some of them were serious physical. So we changed the air conditioning system, significant changes to filtration to prevent any transmission. Wonderful jobs they did with the medical center, how we could make that better and more effective. So all of the kinds of things, how we clean things, et cetera. So we started from a very high standard. The cruise industry had the highest cleanliness standards of any place you can think of. And we said, well, how do we take it to one step above that? So it was a very positive process. And it was a collaborative process. And I think that's one of the problems at the beginning. At the beginning, scientists were acting on their own and individual ideas. And gradually we got people to come together and say, how does this work in practice?
You got consensus.
I won't say we've gotten as far as consensus, but on most of the science, yes. And most of the science, we were able to get a consensus that this actually is a better way of doing things.
Of course, you're dealing at almost simultaneous time with public health, ideology, common sense, and economics.
And a plethora of countries, each of whom had its own perspective on what way it wanted to approach it.
And which remains today.
Which remains today. And probably one of the biggest divisions you have is in the early days of the pandemic, some countries, particularly in Asia, took the approach of isolation as the solution. And other countries said vaccines are going to be key. And what you're seeing, isolation is, of course, an ultimate way of doing it, but it's not viable for long term in a free society. It's not even viable in a police state for a very long time. So the countries that relied on...
You're talking about Australia and New Zealand.
Among others. Not only that, also in Northern Asia and in China and in Singapore and other countries, you see isolation. Japan has tried that. But in the long term, in order to have a free society, we are going to have to rely on another way of preventing it. And that way is becoming the combination of the vaccines and testing. And I think the cruise industry model is going to be a model that others will copy and become really an exemplar of how to deal with something like this.
I'm sure you've heard these three words countless times and it angers you every time you hear them. Floating petri dish.
Well, as I said, we relied on the science, not on the semantics, but that's exactly what some people said in the early day. Maybe in the early days, particularly when people said, if there's a case, keep everybody together. Well, actually, if the beauty of the solution that the cruise industry came up with was, if there's a case, isolate that case. Identify those close contacts. Don't combine them. And if you do that, what you end up with is the situation we have today, where we have a bubble where everybody inside the bubble is safe. And if, in the rare case, somebody comes in to the bubble with the disease, they don't spread it. So we can take the R naught of the cruise ship from a very high level to an infinitely small level. And so if there's a case, it doesn't spread very well. And that's the ultimate goal of epidemiologists and infectious disease specialists and virologists, is keep that R naught down, keep the spreading down.
I was on board the premier cruise of the millennium from St. Martin. I got off in Barbados, and that was a very good example of what you just talked about, where there was one or two cases, they identified them quickly, they isolated them, they were able to do the contact tracing, and there was no spread.
That was one of the very first cases in the Americas, and it was actually two people came down with it. Their close contacts were all tested. They tested negative. They were flown home. People got to fly home privately because we really took good care of them.
Is that part of your brochure now?
I hope not. But we have so few cases that we can afford to handle them with extra care and take special care of them. And that was the objective. But as you say, two people had it. They had been vaccinated and they had been tested. But it's not 100% perfect. But what is perfect is the ability to then isolate them, prevent big outbreak, and get them home quickly.
You know, we talked about all the connectivity in the economic chain of supporting the cruise industry. And an overwhelming amount of your distribution comes from travel agents, travel advisors. And they got hit hard. Not only were they spending an inordinate amount of time advocating for their clients just to try to get their money back, but they were receiving no income during that entire period of time. They weren't part of the government bailout program. They weren't on anybody's list. And you guys stepped up to the plate very early on and said, you know what, we're going to provide financial assistance if necessary to those travel agents.
Well, the travel advisors have been key to our success as a company and as an industry for 50 years.
It's part of your business model.
It's a huge part of our business model, and it's both a question. We needed them to survive, not only because it's the right thing to do to thank them for what they've done for so long, but we need them to be successful as we're going forward.
So you provided financial assistance?
So we paid the commissions. We ended up, in some cases, ending up effectively paying double commissions. We did put in place a loan program to be of some help. Our help was small in the total of the need. You know, the suffering that they've gone through, the effort that they went through, they had to keep their businesses afloat, they had to keep the relationships with their clients. It was a huge task, and I'm just so impressed that while there was suffering from all of them, the travel advisor community has come through remarkably well under the circumstances. And thank goodness they're still supporting us, and let me remind them, if they're listening to this, that there's lots more to come. And we need this support in the future more than ever.
Back in 2018, you had something like 49 ships. Now you've got over 63. Other companies have retired ships. You have more on the way. Do you have any issues about filling those cabins?
I have no concern. We have grown during this period. I think it's actually a little slower than we originally expected because we have disposed of some vessels and we slowed down the construction process. But overall, I think the demand is absolutely enormous. People are tired of being locked up in their homes. They want to get out. They want to go to new places, and we're there for it. So 2000, 2020 and 2021 are years I would like to forget about. 2022, we'll still have some of the reverberations from that, but already we're seeing a very strong demand, pent-up demand, and I think 2023 is really going to be a gangbuster year.
We were doing this interview on board the Silver Sea Silver Moon, one of your newest ships, your newest ship, actually, and they put on their 2022 and 2023 world cruise. It, like, sold out.
Wow. You know, it's just...
And that's not an inexpensive ticket.
and a huge deposit. So it's amazing to see the demand for the New World Cruise, but also for all of our cruises. Once we've gotten through this and people see that it's actually starting, now there's still a bit of a fog about how many ships are starting and when they're going to start. So there's still a little confusion out there. We think that it's important to start the flywheel to show that it's there, and so that cruising simply comes back into the habit of being normal, and people aren't saying, well, are they going to be sailing and will that be happening? This is my first naming ceremony since the crisis started, and one of the things we're celebrating is the forward bookings for Silver Sea over this period.
You know, it's interesting when you think about the cruise industry being uniquely positioned, whereas other industries weren't. In right after 2001, 9/11, you were uniquely positioned to literally move your assets. Nobody wanted to fly over a body of water after 9/11. So you literally repositioned your ships back to U.S. ports. Hotels couldn't do that, right? You're in a situation now where you're now repositioning ships to St. Martin, to Greece, to other locations where you have those opportunities where the environment is welcoming to you. I'm assuming you're now looking at ports that you never would have gone to before that are now open to you.
You know, it's funny you say that, because when you have to do things, sometimes you say, oh my God, why didn't we think of that before? And so new ports is one example of that.
My thanks to Richard Fain, to Minister Theo Harris, and my thanks to you for listening to this Ion Travel podcast. For more conversations with the world's leaders in travel, as well as answers to your travel questions, be sure to rate and review this podcast wherever you happen to listen to podcasts. And for all the breaking travel news, just log on to petergreenberg.com.
Special thanks to our sponsors at Clear. Enroll in Clear at clearme.com/Peter and zip through busy airports nationwide.
Hey, Prime members, Peter Greenberg here. You can listen to Ion Travel ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today, and you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. And before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at Wondery.com.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Catch every episode of 60 Minutes, America's most watched news magazine show, as a podcast. Hear in-depth investigations across politics, news, and entertainment on your schedule. Listen to 60 Minutes ad-free on Wondery Plus.